Okay, so those are our sites.
Oh, yes. All right. Well, moving on from perhaps our discussion, if that's
acceptable. Yeah, that's good.
I think you've probably asked as much of me as I can possibly answer on that one. But really what I suggested in my original submission was that bespoke hub components offered a viable alternative means of realising a bigger hub concept for the Manawatu. I didn't see any discussion or consideration of that in the MCA process. For instance, you know, there is an existing inland container port at Longburn. By all means, move the Tremaine Avenue site somewhere else, perhaps to the northeast industrial zone, closer to warehousing operations, and there's a proposed log hub being developed at Martin. So it's a different way of thinking that there's nothing to say that KiwiRail couldn't build those proposed 1.5-kilometre trains sequentially along spots on the main trunk line as it transits Palmerston North and the Manawatu. You don't have to build them on one site necessarily. You could do containers, you could do freight, you could do logs. Maximise existing utilities and assets, minimise the effects at various sites, spread the risk along KiwiRail's network, coordinate with the major stakeholders along the line, and use the government funding wisely. But as I've argued, it wasn't possible to consider these options because we were already focused and funded and approved for the KiwiRail Bunnythorpe site. Now, the next slide. These are some of the questions I wouldn't mind being put back to KiwiRail, please, regarding the key stakeholders in the MCA and the integrity of the MCA analysis and decisions which were made and the information which was made available to workshop participants. So, for instance, were they aware of the following? So if I could leave those with you, please. And essentially what I'm asking is, were the people who were looking at in the workshops, looking at the various sites and considering all the multi-criteria to analyse, did they know that there were some documents and decisions and funding sitting in behind this and some predeterminants, if you will? I don't know, and I can't answer that, but I wouldn't mind an answer to it, please. So I could just leave that with you, perhaps. On to the next one. On the last point on there, I'd mentioned the Palmerston North City Council's pre-election report in 2019. I just mentioned this in passing, really, but I think it's interesting that I quote from, these are the election reports prepared before the elections, it's sort of a state of the city. And the Palmerston North City is saying two things. Our MOU with KiwiRail and the Transport Authority sees us working towards the establishment of the freight hub in the new northeast industrial zone, and then co-locating the regional freight ring road, the airport, the new rail facility will deliver a world-class multimodal transport opportunity which we believe will enable us to build the fastest and lowest cost distribution hub in New Zealand. I note the use of the word us and we by the council. Somehow the city council's confused itself with KiwiRail. The date of this is... That's October, isn't it? It's in the middle of the election cycle, and it's also in the middle of the multi-criteria analysis workshops before the decision has been made, and yet the City Council is saying it has been. Anyway, come November 2019, the master plan for the freight hub is announced by the Honourable Shane Jones. While the design, as we've seen from the workshop process, confirmed the Bunnythorpe location for the freight hub, Jones nonetheless maintained the soft public sell when he still said that KiwiRail is currently considering potential site options for the freight hub and will run public consultation before making a final decision. Surely the decision had been made a second or indeed a third time by November 2019. I come back to the fact, you know, the funding had been approved by Cabinet, confirmed by those regional economic development ministers, specified in a funding agreement, supported by an MOU, and... Actually, it came out at the end of the MCA workshop process as well as the site. What does it take to make a decision or a series of decisions final? I also note that Shane Jones was saying that KiwiRail would buy land and have it designated for rail use. It's a little different from the compulsory acquisition of private land for non-utility, non-network purposes. Next one. Which leads me on to 2020 and the public engagement consultation process. by KiwiRail. I've read their submissions on the topic, listened to the oral submissions by Ms. Paulson and Ms. Bell and several of the consultants. Now, I did attend the February and September sessions, took part in one of the Zoom sessions, contributed to their online interactive map. I observed little sign of KiwiRail's visions of connecting with communities. These statements at the bottom of the slide are from KiwiRail's sort of mission statements. I saw little sign of their visions of connecting with communities or helping make Bunnythorpe the best place it could be. Or the Provincial Growth Fund priorities of boosting social inclusion and participation and building resilient communities. As I've said, I believe the opportunity for KiwiRail to engage with Bunnythorpe was actually lost in December 2018, when the funding was approved first off. Nor did I see much regard from KiwiRail for the interests of the community. That is an obligation they have as a state-owned enterprise. We're very much last on the list after key stakeholders, freight forwarding companies, politicians, local authority officers. After all, Bunnythorpe was still apparently undeveloped greenfields with residents effectively invisible on the site or on the plans. Indeed, I do wonder if the KiwiRail staff at the 18th of February 2020 meeting were surprised at what they found on the ground when they finally got there. That our village of Bunnythorpe was inconveniently located amongst the North Island main trunk line, the route of the proposed ring road, and the site of the freight hub. The NOR report on community engagement stated that for many, the 18th of February engagement at Bunnythorpe was the first formal notification of the freight hub. And even though further information was still to be provided to the community, such as the preferred site location and footprint of the designation, it was positive for the community to be able to hear what is proposed, how they could become involved and gain more knowledge on the freight hub moving forward. Well, I strongly disagree with that statement. I mean, Minister Jones announced the master plan in November 2019. And as I say, Bunnythorpe should immediately thereafter have been should have been incorporated into the planning, advised of the planning, and the preferred site as early as possible. Indeed, better still, the community should have been involved with the planning process from mid-2018 when KiwiRail first approached Palmer's North City Council to support their business case. I note that there were no community engagement meetings in Taunui or Longburn in February 2020, only in Bunnythorpe. Even though sites 2, Taunui and 4, Longburn, were presented to us at the Bunnythorpe meeting as viable alternatives. Surely, if these were genuine alternatives, it was equally important for KiwiRail to present its proposals and to hear from those communities quite as much as the Bunnythorpe community. So, I therefore contend that an honest appraisal of the Feb 2020 engagement process would have noted that the plan was imposed on us here in Bunnythorpe, not shared with us. We were assured that the final site had not been chosen yet. As I've shown, the site had already been chosen, approved and funded. We were not advised of the 2018 documents, the business case, cabinet approval, PGF funding. We were certainly not advised of the existing timetable and milestones for funding purposes. We weren't advised that this was a PGF fund project rather than a project supported by Vote Transport. Wasn't explained to us why KiwiRail sought a designation rather than a standard resource consent for non-utility and non-network aspects of the plan. Didn't know of the memorandum of understanding from 2019. Didn't actually know of the 2019 site identification process, the MCA process. Weren't told of that. And we weren't invited to engage with, as against comment on, the hub design or the location. Back to Mr. David Murphy's letter. On the other hand, David Murphy at the City Council certainly knew what was going on. This is again his letter of the 30th of April to Olivia Paulson. And I quote, he's talking about the designation of land in the railway road Bunnythorpe area, confirms that the location identified, given its co-location alongside the northeast industrial zone, the Palmerston North Airport, easy connections to the proposed regional freight ring road. All those identifiers mentioned again. It's almost as Mr. Murphy was quoting from KiwiRail's 2018 Better Business Case. His description of the location and of the freight hub was the same. And I'm especially disturbed by his comments regarding the City Council and Bunnythorpe, and I again quote, consistent with the agreement between Palmerston North City Council, KiwiRail and the NZTA, I want to ensure Palmerston North City Council is doing everything it can to support Kibi Rail with the designation and subsequent development of the hub. So what mattered to him wasn't the MCA outcome, but the Memorandum of Understanding. The limited amount of residential or not rural residential development in the area allowing 24/7 operations, well, we wish to disagree with that. Quite a lot of people do live in Bunnythorpe. In the interests of managing the risks posed by other landowners and stakeholders. Again, that's us. We're a risk to the development. So from my perspective, truly, as the council's 2019 pre-election report stated, the freight hub was a done deal. July 2020, Minister Jones finally made public the site for the regional freight hub between the airport and Bunnythorpe. Once again, it's the Minister of Regional Development making the announcements, not the Minister of Transport. I note with reference to my earlier comments on scope that Jones is again stating that the hub would be built next to major distribution companies in the northeast industrial zones. So he's still talking about co-location rather than freight forwarding companies being part of the hub development itself. Nearly done. So moving on for the question of predetermination at last, I'd just like to consider some of the projections and predictions which have been made about the hub. For my part, I'm always sceptical about projections and predictions when they relate to large-scale industrial developments. Numbers followed by multiple zeros are easy to announce, but they're difficult to quantify and often much harder to realise. I say this in the context of my PhD on the Manapouri-Tiwai Point electro-industrial complex. Proponents, I'd go so far as to say boosters of that scheme, in central and local government, spoke of how more than 1,400 people would work at the smelter at peak production. The workforce never reached that level. Indeed, the new suburb constructed in Invercargill in the early 70s for the influx of smelter workers, predicted influx, that suburb was never acquired. And the high school, which was built for the workers' children, always struggled to keep up the role. I know that. My mother was the principal. There was also much talk about a fully integrated aluminium industry, which would produce aluminium products in New Zealand. Now, that didn't happen either. Tiwai is part of a vertically integrated multinational operation. The promised profits from the smelter never eventuated either, for it was established as a toll smelter, a processing operation for someone else's product, which thus pays minimal taxes or tariffs. The added, as always, and the same with milk, the actual value is added somewhere else. And I make the comparison here with the freight hub. No value is added when nothing is produced on site, and instead freight is moved from one place to another. Profits are always realised elsewhere. The only point of the freight hub, as with a smelter or a milk powder factory, is efficiency and competitiveness. The cheaper a process can be operated, the better the margins for profit. A profitable railway company with an efficient infrastructure might not need 24/7 operations and giant trains. They just have to be efficient and effective for people to use them. Similar large claims were made by Solid Energy a decade ago when they bought up farms surrounding Mataura in Southland. That's on the right. Their proposal was to turn up to 1.3 billion tonnes of lignite into briquettes or fertiliser or synthetic fuel, ultimately employing hundreds of people, helping ensure New Zealand's energy needs for a century or more. A pilot briquette plant, which employed 13 people, closed in ignominy in 2013. Solid Energy collapsed 2 years later, and the land was returned to farming. Thus, I view Minister Jones's claims of a workforce of 2,000 at the freight hub with considerable scepticism. We've been here before. Tiwai Point, Mataura Lignite, and any number of think big projects, you know, Motunui, Aramoana, Clyde Dam, anyone? Similarly, Mayor Smith's claims that over 300 new jobs will be created during the construction of the site, well, land shaping with heavy machinery is skilled work. You just can't magic up 300 experienced bulldozers or scraper operators from the population. You just can't. Kibi Rail itself changed the tune in September 2020, they admitted that the construction of the hub would support 300 jobs. But they're still holding to the notion here that 2,000 people would work at the hub. Which then took me to the May 2021 Section 92 response from KiwiRail when they were talking about actual and projected employment. I found that clarified and confused the issue still further. Figures on the chart I couldn't get to add up because I can't distinguish between the relocation of existing employees to the site by KiwiRail and freight partners and how many new jobs might be created. If I'm right, there are no new KiwiRail employees and only a small number of new freight partner employees. The projected total, 1,005, is half of Minister Jones's optimism. And if the move is from road to rail freight, I question even that figure of 1,005, for how does that balance against the loss of road transport jobs? Is there even a net gain in employment sufficient to justify all of the expense and the effects associated with the project? Forcing people out of their homes, degrading the local environment, diminishing the quality of life of the remaining residents. Incidentally, as at 31st of July 2021, KiwiRail has spent $19 million of the $40 million of PGF funding. In terms of jobs, that has supported 43 previous and 29 current jobs to a total of 72 jobs. That's it so far. Any projected efficiencies or benefits of the hub operation are decades into the future. On this point, the Productivity Commission has noted that the efficiency of KiwiRail's integrated monopoly network equates to being competitive and thus cheaper by cutting costs. Therefore, I fail to see a real return to our community or region from a freight hub proposal which is predicated on cutting costs rather than making profits. And in fact, there's no guarantee that manufacturers and freight forwarding companies will actually choose to move freight by rail, not road. The efficiencies of freight and Mr. Todd Moyle's super trains remain unproven. Similarly, the projected economic environmental benefits I consider a little more than greenwash. Carbon production will be centred on the freight hub rather than along the transport area. We actually get all the vehicles, all the carbon-producing trains and trucks and everything else on the site. There's been no cost-benefit analysis undertaken by anyone, not by the council, certainly not by KiwiRail. And when I say cost-benefit, what, for instance, is the economic value of Bunnythorpe? Property value, amenity, and the harder-to-quantify dollar value of residents as workers and ratepayers? What alternative economic uses might there be of the land within the NOR area? It's highly productive land. It could be used for housing. It could be used for other industrial developments. In fact, put another way, give us the $40 million and see what we can do with it. What negative economic effects might there be to Bunnythorpe? Well, some of that has been canvassed in some of the reports. I take a particular concern with property values, rates to the council, and locking up those hectares which could be usefully developed for other purposes. There are alternative uses for a site than turning it into the equivalent of a gigantic parking lot for freight. I consider Bunnythorpe as being asked to underwrite the proposal with their taxes and subsidise the proposal by sacrificing their community, their environment and their quality of life. I now return to the problematic community consultation process. I found between July and September 2020 this was as one-sided as the February 2020 engagement day. As a participant in the drop-in sessions and online discussions, I observed that rather than engaging with the community, this was a process whereby KiwiRail gathered criticisms from the community to help focus their own NOR application. During these meetings, I further observed that criticisms were usually met with justifications, not compromise. I didn't experience any flexibility in KiwiRail's approach. My background partly is in local government. I did coordinate community outcomes processes in Southland for four local councils over 6 years. It was LA Southland. And I appreciated then that the best plans for communities are those which are inclusive and iterative. The challenge and reward is involve the community from the outset. That worked for us. In order to ensure that a project is accepted, modified and embraced. In fact, if a community can't see itself and recognise itself in something, it cannot see a value in it.
Is that a classroom in the Bunnythorpe School?
It is a classroom in the Bunnythorpe School. It's a lovely school, actually.
It is. And is it organised according to effects? So each table has an effects focus. Like
yes,
noise.
So you can see Dr. Childs with noise, stormwater, because they had the various plans that we're all trying to locate our own properties on. And they were bleached out a bit, but yes. I think they had two rooms that they were using. My preference would be to refer the panel to the social impact assessment for the Manawatū Tararua Road. There, the author, Amelia Lindsay, recognised and understood the definition and value of effective engagement with the community. I recognise that as a good model of community engagement. She has also highlighted the multiple deficiencies on Kiwi Rail's own social impact assessment in her Section 42 report for this project. Now, as I say, if Kiwi Rail had been serious about working with us, they could have come to us as early as mid-2018 or November 2018 or certainly earlier in 2019. City Council could have facilitated this approach and helped mediate between the community and the SOE. After all, Kiwi Rail has $3 million available for the site identification, master plan preparation and planning work. With that sort of funding, you can afford to work with the local community. A letter of support from Mayor Smith was not representative of our community's hopes and fears. Which brings me finally onto the notice of requirement. I do submit that it's not fit for purpose. It's tripled in size since it was approved. The project has tripled in size since it was approved by Cabinet in October 2018. The footprint has expanded outside of the original undeveloped Greenfields location. The effects are multiplied now that the hub sits over rural residences and slap bang amongst the residential community. The effects can't be properly considered while so much of the project remains uncertain. Conditions can't be imposed so long as major aspects of the hub, the freight forwarding facilities or the shunting arrangements into the middle of Bunnythorpe or road freight movements haven't been finalised or indeed considered to sit outside of the NOR. And I say reports and plans work best when people can see themselves and their community reflected in them. The Bunnythorpe described in the Kiwi Rail NOR reports isn't the community I know, not the social impact, not the economic, not the ecological, not the transport, and not the noise and vibration. We're not an undeveloped greenfield site with residential development distant enough to permit 24/7 operations. So we're not. Equally, there's not a definition of success in the community engagement. For instance, how might a successful co-location of a freight hub and residential rural community actually work? What is the acceptable outcome for all parties? And there was never an option that I'd observed for modifying the plan. I mean, could aspects of the proposal be altered, removed, or relocated to minimise the effects on the community? Things have been changed around on the plan, but actually take another look at it and think, what can we do and what shouldn't we do? What's necessary, what isn't? No offers were made by Kiwi Rail to benefit the community. Nothing. Instead, we've received one-sided communications from Kiwi Rail. In February 2020, we were assured at that meeting the final site hadn't been chosen, yet the schematic of the hub fitted neatly within the boundaries of the land between Bunnythorpe and Foodstuffs. Many of us in the school that time for that meeting recognised that straight off. We didn't know about the funding decisions in 2018. We didn't know about the 2019 site identification process, and so on. On the positive side, I contend the submissions and presentations from Bunnythorpers prove that this is a community which does understand the issues associated with the hub, good and bad. There is some support for it. I mean, people are not unreasonable. Indeed, had the notice of requirement been prepared by a team from Bunnythorpe, it would have been a far more comprehensive and workable document. We have genuine talent and experience in our village. It's a tremendous community resource. Kiwi Rail should have used that. So, 24-hour operations. Todd Moyle described how freight operates as a 24-hour operation. I'm not convinced. Again, planned well and in advance, the movement of non-critical freight from the site wouldn't have to be undertaken 24/7. I haven't read about any time-critical freight moving through the hub. It all seems to be manufactured goods, logs, milk powder or liquids. Equally, I haven't read about any products small or light enough to warrant linking the hub to air freight operations. You can't fly logs. So my question is, therefore, how would a standard working hours freight hub operate? A different model, and clearly one which Kiwi Rail has not considered. Given that Kiwi Rail, Waka Kotahi and the council now know all too well that we're not an undeveloped greenfield site and that our houses aren't distant from the proposed hub, why isn't this considered? Change the mindset, plan ahead, extend the timetables for movement and delivery of goods, and you can work within standard hours of operation and still deliver the goods on time. They're not perishable goods, and some of them aren't necessarily time critical. It's just another way of doing business, and perhaps a more flexible and sustainable model for intermodal freight development within a community. On noise, I've listened to Dr. Childs and some of his statements gave me real cause for concern that the noise plan was designed so you could enjoy a conversation at a barbecue without shouting. Goodness. That residents at a port, in another case, knew they were in for a noisy night when a particular car arrived because that container operator was notoriously heavy-handed. And yet there seemed to be no way of addressing that problem. That the health effects of noise on individuals and families can be subjective, and he referred to residents at Makara who were upset by wind farm noise who moved and who were replaced by residents who weren't worried by the noise. We like living where we are. That the acoustic treatment of houses was designed to enable people to sleep at night with their windows shut and the heat pump on. This is cold comfort here for the residents of Bunnythorpe, where the inference is that the freight hub will become a noisy operation and on a 24/7 basis. I strongly disagree with Dr. Childs that noise control or mitigation is a precise science. I'm deeply concerned at the cumulative noise effect of the total freight hub operations, that includes rail and road and main trunk line operations, maybe even the airport as well. And I don't believe that noise limits could be held to the arbitrary lines on a plan drawn by Dr. Childs. Quite the contrary. I fear that we'll be living next to endless performances of the 1812 overture, to be honest, at times, especially at night. Furthermore, aspects of the freight hub operations outside of the hub haven't been considered. So, yeah, they do need to be considered. It's part of the whole package and the cumulative noise and overall effects which we might experience. We will be close to the ring road should that go through. Conditions. A number of Kiwi Rail consultants want us to believe that the effects from the freight hub, including noise, light, vibration, loss of amenity, will be acceptable. I'm not convinced. I contend that the only option for Bunnythorpe is the zero-sum option in our favour, that the freight hub is invisible, that the environmental effects of the freight hub should be fully internalised within the site boundaries so we neither see nor hear the thing, however that could be achieved. The noise must not raise above birdsong. Light must shine no brighter than moonlight. Heavy trucks must move distant from Bunnythorpe. Freight movements on the main trunk line must be controlled to minimise effects for communities all along the line. We've heard nothing, for instance, on the effects of the proposed super trains on Fielding. I agree with the submission of Mr. Morgan Slyfield on behalf of Peter Gore and Dale O'Reilly that it's not possible to appreciate the scale and significance of effects and thus the requisite mitigation which might be required or possible, and that based on the information we have. He rightly notes the indicative or speculative nature of some of the technical discussions, to which I would add that a number of mitigation measures have been suggested on the basis of assumptions or estimates. It's impossible to assess or mitigate the unknown or the yet to be decided. We can't make an informed decision on the information available to us here at Bunnythorpe. The assurances and the consultants' reports are, as Mr. Slyfield has pointed out, either conditional or contradictory. The construction noise conditions, which Ms. Tancock dealt with this morning, they can be breached. Visual amenity might be overwhelmed. Operational noise levels may be excessive, and indeed this is specifically allowed in the conditions as proposed. And there are components, of course, which sit outside KiwiRail's master plan. So noise and some other conditions will be the responsibility of other agencies or even private companies coming on site. Where are the conditions that restrict their operations and the noise that they're going to produce? I also want to describe my unease at the crucial role assigned to the head of planning at the City Council in the 13th of August iteration of the conditions as proposed. I've already noted, for instance, that 30th of April 2020 letter from the Council to KiwiRail, which Mr Murphy wanted to ensure that the City Council would do everything it could to support KiwiRail with the designation and subsequent development of the hub, consistent with the Memorandum of Understanding. It raises questions about the extent to which any future provisions put forward by KiwiRail would ever limit its business to the extent that it would meet community concerns and so avoid remedy or mitigate adverse effects. What we need in the event of the hub project proceeding are firm conditions that set actual limits and constraints on the way the freight hub is constructed and operated that address fully understood and assessed adverse effects included within the designation. Here we go. Seek the last slide. From my perspective, it's been a flawed process, including predetermination of site choice, lack of transparency to stakeholders, including the impacted community and private landowners, by a network operator seeking a designation for activities beyond the scope of its requiring authority status. In addition, over the past 3 years, we've seen the scale and scope of the hub growing considerably, which adds uncertainty to the process and to the relationship between what was approved by Cabinet in 2018 and the scope of what we're considering here today. Cabinet approved that. Don't need to go into that. I've already covered it enough. I think the Cabinet Government should be concerned over the change in the scale and scope of what they approved and funded in 2018. They should be concerned about a process that appears to include activities that can't be undertaken within the scope of the legal status of KiwiRail as a requiring authority. It also raises the question of what Cabinet intended when it granted that public money for regional development. Did Cabinet really intend that regional development money would be used eventually to compulsorily acquire private property and force people out of their homes? These are significant issues with respect to the operation of state-owned enterprises and requiring authorities, the approved use of public funds, and the status of privately owned land. And I contend that the purposes of the PGF money is markedly different from KiwiRail's financial responsibilities under Vote Transport. What should have been a transparent regional development process and project for the benefit of Palmerston North has become a more ambitious, better business model for the benefit of KiwiRail. Where are the other key components of a PGF project, such as enhancing economic development opportunities, creating sustainable jobs, enabling Māori to reach full potential, boosting social inclusion and the participation and building of resilient communities? I'd go further and argue that KiwiRail has moved away from its obligations under the Treaty of Waitangi, its objectives to sustain an enterprise, and their own company vision statements. I believe it's the mission of every government agency to serve and protect, but not oppress. Indeed, I'm actually deeply concerned about some of these issues, and I feel it's a flawed and untransparent process which we've seen from KiwiRail. So I've actually approached our local MP about taking these very issues to the Office of the Auditor General to examine process and public funds. This is my final slide. A statement was made by Olivia Paulson on the first day of the hearing. Freight hubs don't belong in the middle of cities, but passenger railway stations do. As Bunny thought, we are actually part of the Palmerston North City Council. We're an urban area within the City Council. I feel that freight hubs don't belong in the middle of our village any more than they would in the middle of Palmerston North City itself. So the relief that I seek, or that we seek, please recommend to KiwiRail that the notice of requirement be withdrawn. I contend it has too many problems, too many weaknesses and contradictions to be valid. In conclusion, I ask the panel please free our community from the intolerable burden of KiwiRail's freight hub proposal, which seems neither necessary nor desirable in this location. That's from our perspective. Please free us from the fear, the worry and the grief at the prospect of losing our homes, our lifestyle, our amenities, our community, and our collective peace of mind. The injustice and inequity of the freight hub proposition has dominated our thoughts since February 2020 like a never-ending migraine. We are in desperate need of peace, of quiet, and most and best of all, justice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fox. Commissioners, some questions. Commissioner Pumari.
Tēnā kōrua, Dr. Fox, thank you very much for your extremely diligent and comprehensive submissions to the panel. We really appreciate, obviously, the extensive time and effort that's gone into producing these submissions. And I have been reflecting on what you've been saying as you've been presenting today, and obviously further reflecting on Ms. Tancock's legal submissions too. And I don't have any specific questions for you today, other than to say that clearly the points that you raise are extremely significant ones, and they're very well made, the points that you have made, and as a panel we're going to have to take some time to reflect on your submissions and obviously look a lot more closely at the documentation that you've provided in support of your submissions as well today. So no specific questions from me, but just to acknowledge the nature and extremely comprehensive way in which you've provided and presented these submissions today. Thank you very much. Kia ora.
Thank you. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you. Commissioner Mackinson.
Good afternoon, Dr. Fox. You've clearly spent a great deal of time looking into this at forensic detail levels, and you've shared that with us in full, so I don't actually have any questions for you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Sweetman.
And I'll just reiterate what my two fellow commissioners have said as well.
Thank you. Now, I don't have any further questions because I asked you lots as we went along.
You did.
So we come to Dr. Whittle.